Good morning, everybody. And as hundreds of thousands of people are gathering along Florida's Space Coast anticipating the launch of Space Shuttle Atlantis, we thought this would be a great opportunity to talk to you about what's next in NASA human spaceflight. So we've scheduled this briefing today, and we have a panel here that will be addressing that. I'd like to introduce the folks up here at this time. NASA Deputy Administrator Lori Garver, Associate Administrator for the Exploration Systems Mission Directorate, Doug Cook, and International Space Station Program Manager, Mike Seffredini. And we'll begin with opening comments, and then we'll be happy to take your questions. Ms. Garver?
Thank you, Mike. Good morning. It is a pleasure to be here on the cusp of this great milestone for NASA, this country, and the world. We're so proud of the men and women of this workforce, the entire government and industry team that has proudly flown out the Space Shuttle program over the past 30 years for this nation. Space Shuttle has provided unbelievable benefit and return on the investment of the American taxpayer. She has launched numerous spacecraft to low Earth orbit and beyond, spacecraft to outer planets, spacecraft that have helped communicate with the ground so that our servicemen and women overseas have been kept out of harm's way. We have been able to launch for the last 30-something flights the space station program. The International Space Station program is a huge part of our future. And as Administrator Bolden said last week, human spaceflight is not ending with the retirement of the Space Shuttle program. Indeed, American leadership in space will continue for at least the next half century. We have been able to extend the space station program for at least another 5 years. So that's a total of 10 years now till 2020, as we have announced. We are working to reduce the gap in spaceflight for cargo and crew to the International Space Station from right here in Florida. And we in Americans are so proud of our history of space exploration, and we believe we will be going further, faster, as we develop the next generation of spacecraft. We are working with our industry team on the MPCV, the Multi-Purpose Crew Vehicle Orion. We are working on the Space Launch System. We will be announcing soon the specific design for that launch system. And once again, we in this nation have the opportunity to raise the bar. Great nations explore, and we are going to be demonstrating what human beings can do as we are challenged and as we work to inspire the nation and the world. So we have been given a roadmap by President Obama and a charge to reach those new heights and reveal the unknown and leave future generations with more capability than we have today. We've set our sights farther on destinations in the solar system that will open up not only new markets here closer to Earth with reducing the costs and streamlining the operations of our space transportation systems, but going beyond low Earth orbit, first to an asteroid in around 2025, and then onto Mars in the mid-2030s. We will be maximizing the use of the International Space Station. This is really our toehold for the future. We have been, with our international partners, building the space station as the centerpiece of our human spaceflight activities for the next decade. NASA science has incredible things coming up. Just in the next 6 months, we will be launching Earth science missions. We will be going to Mars, was just able to see the Mars Science Lab, which is already here at the Cape, as well as going to the Moon with our GRAIL mission, and to head for Jupiter with Juno. All these missions already here and ready to launch this year. There are many, many more missions coming up to improve the understanding not only of our home planet, but the solar system and beyond. We're investing in technologies that will make our rockets go farther and faster so that we can continue to build on the capabilities that NASA has invested in over our first 50 years of history. We're also taking that history to continue our cutting-edge aeronautics research and improve tomorrow's aircraft and systems that we all depend on to get from place to place on this planet. So President Obama has given us a mission with a capital M to focus on, again, the big picture of exploration and the crucial research development that we need to move beyond low Earth orbit. He's charged us with carrying out these inspiring missions as only NASA can. Going places we've never been. We know that asteroids have had an impact on our planet's past and undoubtedly can affect our future. We need to learn more about them, and we also need to go that farther distance on our way to that destination of Mars. We're continuing the work already done, as I mentioned, on the Orion vehicle for the multipurpose crew vehicle, the next generation capsule that's going to take our astronauts to those far destinations. As we finalize consideration of the decisions on our space launch system of that heavy rocket that will complement and carry the capsule, we do plan to make that announcement of our decision in the near future while we look at the investments that we make and make sure that we can have the most affordable and sustainable program on behalf of the American people. So here at the Kennedy Space Center, we'll be upgrading our capabilities as NASA's premier launch port and bring in more users to take advantage of this national resource. So the retirement of the space shuttle program, again, not an end. It's the start of the next chapter in America and in space exploration. As the United States continues to lead the world, we truly, truly salute the workforce of this amazing space shuttle program. It is an wonderful accomplishments that have been made that we will be standing on the shoulders of as we look forward to continue to bring America that exploring frontier of the future that NASA has been doing for half a century. Thank you.
Okay. Doug.
Yes. Good morning. We've come to an important point in the history of human spaceflight. We obviously are reaching the end of operations of the longest operating human spaceflight system that our country has built. At the same time, we are embarking on a new era in spaceflight where we turn over routine transportation to and from Earth orbit to companies while we at NASA focus and set our sights on preparing to send people once again to explore beyond Earth orbit. In my mind, the space shuttle is still a modern wonder of the engineering world. The machines, the people who prepare them, and those who fly and operate them have done a magnificent job. And we will see that one more time with the coming mission of STS-135. I was fortunate enough to begin my career in the early days of shuttle development in the early 70s, leading the aerodynamic flight test effort, beginning with the approach and landing test in the 70s. As a kid out of college, I learned from legends in human spaceflight management and engineering, people like Max Faget and Chris Kraft, Gene Kranz, Bob Thompson, Aaron Cohen, Glenn Lunny, and many others. It was a great opportunity. And it has provided a great opportunity for me, as well as many young engineers, operators, technicians, and astronauts. While we reach the end of as the shuttle orbiters reach final wheel stop on their final missions, it's obviously with mixed feelings. But at the same time, it's exciting to think about what we have in store for us in the future of human spaceflight. We have initiated the first steps in commercial spaceflight developments. Our commercial cargo program team members are making progress in their developments. SpaceX Falcon 9 has launched twice and are making progress. We anticipate another flight in the fall. Orbital Sciences has continued to make progress in its development, and we anticipate a flight in the coming months with them as well. Our commercial crew program, led by KSC, is in its second phase of Space Act agreements, and the companies involved are making their milestones already in that effort. And those companies are Boeing, SpaceX, Sierra Nevada Corporation, Blue Origin, and they're all making progress on those recently awarded Space Act agreements. At the same time, our team here at KSC is putting together what's needed to do the next round of competitions. Now, as we look beyond Earth orbit, we are shaping the path forward for the multipurpose crew vehicle Orion and the heavy lift space launch system. Most of you are aware of the progress that has been made on the crew vehicle. And in fact, we I think you can see Pad Abort 1 hardware here. And we are continuing to work that in earnest and making progress on it. We are continuing to work through the details on moving from Ares 1 work under the Constellation program to a new space launch system, which will have the performance needed for people to travel beyond Earth orbit. And although we are not at a point to discuss details today, be assured that we are actively yet carefully working through those steps to make sure we are providing a well-thought-out strategy that will be the best approach for many years to come. These vehicles, the MPCV and SLS, are the first critically important capabilities that we need in development for exploration missions to discover things we can't even imagine about other destinations in our solar system. They'll become the workhorses for these exploration missions in the future, and we'll be able to achieve going to the conceivable possible destinations in our near future. We will also continue to learn about living and sustaining health for our astronauts for long periods in space through our human research program and testing on International Space Station. We will be developing in-house at NASA additional concepts and prototypes of space systems that we'll need to augment the SLS and MPCV on these missions of exploration beyond Earth orbit. We also need to invest in technology for these long-term missions. There are things that we know of that we need to invest in that will be needed for the kind of missions that we're talking about in the future. So those are important. That investment is important as well. And it's things like advanced in-space propulsion, advanced life support systems, in-situ resource utilization, and a number of others. We also need research in radiation effects on people. So those are all important investments as well that we'll need for our future. We will be applying what we have learned over the past few years on Ares and Orion and the tests that we've conducted, like Ares 1X here at KSC and Pad Abort 1 and development motor tests that we've done, other ground tests that have added to our understanding of these critical systems and reduced risk in terms of our ability to move forward in these new programs. We're also learning to build healthy programs and modern, robust designs by working more efficiently with our industry partners. We have a talented and experienced team that is working through the necessary near-term steps to ensure a bright future for human space exploration. This is a future that I've always dreamed of, and I look forward to seeing it successfully move forward. Thank you.
Mike?
Well, good morning. As you have all followed us for several years as we've assembled station, you've seen us focus on the process of assembly, of which the shuttle, of course, has played the significant role of bringing each of the elements to ISS and her crew, helping us put the components together. And during that process, we did do research on board ISS, but it was limited, and we always gave the priority to the assembly phase because it was it was a critical part of the program at that point. So what this shuttle flight means to the ISS program is it is the turning point. It's where we transition our thought process from one of assembly to one of utilization. The significance of that is now we focus on the utilization piece of it and providing them a certain allocation of time and resources, and then we will maintain the ISS and do the repairs necessary along the way in the time that's left. And during assembly, it was exactly opposite. We would do the work we had to assemble the vehicle and operate the vehicle, and then what was left we gave to the research community. And this is a significant step. We're gonna go up to about an average of 35 hours a week as long as we're at a three-person crew. And when our commercial crew folks arrive and we're able to step up to four crew members, then we'll double that time available for research on board ISS here in the future. And the rest of the work we do to maintain the vehicle, we'll do in the remaining time that's left with the crew. And that's the way we actually have been managing ourselves over the last year. But with the shuttle, with this last shuttle flight now, we can actually obligate the complete 35 hours to the research community. And that's an important part because the ISS, we didn't build the ISS just to build, although we learned a lot from that facet. We built it to utilize it. And on board, you'll see us, you've heard a lot of talk about the research, and that will continue. We have wonderful facilities inside. It is a laboratory, much like a laboratory on the ground. We have minus 80 degree freezers, we have glove boxes, we have fluids racks and combustion racks specifically to study fluids and combustion. We have multi-purpose racks, we have human research racks. All of these are capabilities to do multiple types of research in those areas. We have a number of outside facilities, of course, the largest of which was recently occupied by the Alpha Magnetic Spectrometer, but we have a number of smaller payloads as well that have arrived to station and many that are coming to study new technologies as well as study the Earth and the stars as well. So we're well on our way. You won't see the same winged vehicle visiting ISS, but we have a number of other capabilities or systems that will support us. We have, of course, the new SpaceX vehicle that hopefully will be flying here towards the end of this year, and the Cygnus vehicle that will be provided by Orbital, which will also be arriving end of this year, maybe early next year. In addition to that, we still have the HTV provided by our Japanese colleagues and the ATV by our European colleagues. And these vehicles will support us very well from a logistics perspective and allow us to do the research we want to do. So as you look forward, we have a robust capability. This shuttle flight will provide us additional supplies to give us a little time to let these new systems come to fruition in their own time, and that will allow us to provide the appropriate not only supplies for the crews but all the research hardware you need to conduct the many experiments that we want to conduct on orbit. So this has been a great period for all of us. We've learned a lot, but what this flight represents to us is a transition now to utilizing this asset that we've built. And I expect we'll learn tremendous things along the way, contribute to society in a way we can't even imagine today. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we'll be happy to take questions now. In order to ensure that everyone has a chance, we'd like to limit it to one question and a follow-up, please. Also, please wait for the microphone, state your name and affiliation, and to whom you're addressing your question. And we'll start things off, if we could, with Seth Bornstein.
Seth Bornstein from AP for Lori Garver. I know you're not ready to announce the SLS architecture here yet again. Can you explain to us what you are deciding between, what options you're trying to figure, what is that point that's keeping you from doing this and fulfilling what the Senate wants, the Congress wants? And I guess as a follow-up, it's been 16 months since you've killed Constellation. The lack of, some of your critics say the lack of details is one of the reasons why people believe you're killing human spaceflight. Why have you had such a hard time coming up with details, decisions, focus on your next generation of whatever's happening? You've had a lot of time. Why can't you provide sort of more clear path here?
Thanks, Seth. I disagree with the premise of your statement that we've taken a long time. It was only in April that we even had a budget that was passed for 2011 and beyond. I think we all want the same thing. We all in this country, at NASA and the Congress, want a program that is sustainable, affordable, and is going to allow us to again go beyond low Earth orbit and extend the presence of humanity into the solar system. We need to make sure that the systems that we are developing are going to be sustainable. We are looking at the cost analysis of these final trades on specific designs of a rocket. It is interesting to me that this has become an issue that people believe we're not making progress because they don't have the finer points on this design. We have been working consistently since this administration, even continuing after the termination of Constellation. You said it was terminated 15 months ago. It obviously was not, legally could not be, until just 2 months ago. So that is a bit of a difference in your timeline. In addition, we are going to utilize, as Doug really concisely pointed out, these skills, these people, many of these systems, they have been an investment that this nation has made that we intend to carry forward with the new systems. Just like we've already made the determination on Orion, the requirements are very, very similar to what we need to go again further. We need to be able to have systems, though, that are streamlined and the cost more efficient. And since those systems are no longer focused on the space station, since we're doing that in a different way, can be focused specifically on going beyond low Earth orbit.
So the specific cost traits for SLS you're weighing, what are they right now?
Precisely. The cost analysis, and then, as we outlined in our report to Congress in January, an independent cost assessment. Those are the final stages being worked now to make sure the systems we choose, we can afford to fly. You know, we did inherit a system that was in disarray. We inherited a system that had the space station going into the Pacific Ocean in 2016. We had an Ares Orion system that would not have been able to get to the space station before it was deorbited. There would have been not only a human spaceflight gap of launches from this country, but a human spaceflight gap as in no Americans or other astronauts in space. We're a spacefaring civilization now. We have been for over 10 years. We have been able to sustain that. We're going to shorten the gap if we can with this commercial space program so we count less on the Russian Soyuz vehicle. When we came in, we would have been counting on the Russian vehicle from a year ago because these last two shuttle flights were not funded in the past administration. They were not funded by the last Congresses. This is a new program. We funded the AMS program. We funded this mission that we hope to launch tomorrow, shortening the gap at that end. We believe using U.S. industry, American industry that has been with us for over 50 years, we can, within that 3 to 5 year time frame, again, launch humans from this nation to and from the International Space Station, extending its useful life, utilizing it, just what Mike Seffredini said we built it for.
Okay, Jay Barbary.
Jay Barbary with NBC. Lori, for you and Doug. You mentioned a while ago we got Orion back as the multipurpose. Sitting, I'm looking at the shuttle sitting there now. There's those rockets flown 218 times successfully. They are man-rated. You have the SSME engines inside. They're man-rated. You've got equipment here ready to go that you could possibly go with by 2016. A lot of people here are wondering why you're not doing it. Now, I want to mention the fact that 2 years ago, we had 12,000 people working here, and you have been very complimentary, all of you, on the excellent work that the people on shuttle did. Now we have 6,700. After this mission, we're going to have 1,000. And to get personal, my own daughter, about your age, she's a single mother. She worked out here 26 years. She lost her job a year ago. She's now lost her home. She won't let her dad help her because she's too independent, as he is. But anyway, she's holding on to be one of the people that would be called back. Now, what I'm asking you here, I know how hard Lori's working. I know how hard Doug is working. I know how hard Charlie is working. Can't you guys go back in the next 2 weeks to Washington, crack the whip, come back when we have wheels stopped on Atlantis, and tell these people here what we got for heavy lift, where we're going to go. Give them a little hope, because they really are not holding on to very much. You think it's possible we could get an SLS statement by the end of this mission so there's no gap?
Thanks for your question, Jay. I absolutely agree that we have incredible systems to build on. And I agree that we are working all, as I said, toward the same thing. The SLS does have a path. We do recognize the design reference vehicle that was in the report that was in January that we are making sure is the best system that we can have, procuring it in a way at best value to the taxpayer, so that not only can your daughter and others continue to have jobs in this country, but that not every job will necessarily be paid for by the taxpayer. If we can reduce our operational costs in these vehicles, we can again win back that commercial market share that we have lost in this country over the last 20 years. We used to launch 80-90% of commercial launches in this country. We are down below 20%. We have lost that market to the French, to the Chinese, and to the Russians. We need to have systems that we can afford to fly, not just for NASA, but for the military and for commercial, so that the Space Coast can again be that vibrant place that we all know it can be. And the workforce here doesn't have to just be working for Uncle Sam. They can, again, be part of this great American enterprise of aerospace exploration. So yes, whether it's 2 weeks or 4 weeks, we're going to get you that system detail that you need so that companies can again look to the future. We really, really recognize that this workforce is what has led this nation. Aerospace is one of the greatest industries on the planet. U.S. aerospace industry is one of our last of the positive export industries. And appreciate the work of your family and the families of everybody in this great, not only state, but country. And we in Washington, believe it or not, really do intend to make the best use of the incredible talent that we have. And we will do it as soon as possible. I got my whip to crack in my back pocket.
2 weeks, Lori.
Irene. Thanks very much. Irene Klotz with Reuters, also for you, Lori. Thanks for doing this. In the theme of the government jobs, NASA right now is, like most of the federal and state, everybody's budgets is under tremendous pressure to reduce, get smaller, find other ways to do things. So in light of that, do you think that NASA is going to be upping its percentage of its budget for commercial endeavors? Right now it's like roughly 270 plus your transportation contracts under the CCDEV. And also, how are you planning to handle the overruns on James Webb telescope? Thanks.
Thanks, Irene. We do recognize that the country is making tough choices, tough choices about especially its government dollars and NASA. We feel we are making those tough choices and have made them with our budget request of 2012. We absolutely have laid out where we intend to go with our deep space programs at nearly $3 billion a year, the space station program at nearly $3 billion a year, the commercial crew program, our request has been $850 million. We will see ultimately where that all goes. We believe we need a balanced program. NASA needs to be doing the hard thing of the deep space exploration, of the space science, earth sciences, and aeronautics while we work with our private sector in new ways to reduce the operational costs of things like transportation to and from the space station with cargo and crew. As to the question of the James Webb Space Telescope, this is a perfect example of NASA revealing the unknown and reaching for new heights. It was a stretch program. We have developed technologies. We will be prepared to lay out a budget that will allow us to launch the Webb telescope yet in this decade within the next budget cycle. We'll be working with the Congress to assure them that we can manage this program and develop the most amazing space telescope humanity's ever seen.
Okay, we'll go to the other side of the room for some questions now and begin with Keith.
Keith Cowan, YesWatch.com. It's for anybody who wants to answer. Yesterday, Lori and a bunch of us went on a SpaceX tour here at the Cape, and we all heard talk of launching the Falcon 9 with a single-digit number of people and mission control room smaller than the one we're in right now. And they want to do it with even fewer people. Now, NASA's about to embark on the development of the SLS Orion, missions to asteroids, and continuing to use the ISS. Is NASA ever going to approach the levels of innovation and efficiency that are evidenced by SpaceX and these other companies? And if so, when? And if not, why not? And I guess what I'm really asking, it's the 21st century, and we've already used up 10% of it. Can NASA really continue to justify operations that use a marching army when the private sector can do it with a sprinting platoon?
I'll start and let anyone else feel free to jump in. I think SpaceX would be the first people to tell you, as they told us yesterday, that they could not be doing what they're doing without the NASA, the government investment. They're on a pad that was formerly the Titan pad. They could not have developed that from scratch for what they did. They are utilizing the investment that we have made, just as the Orion team is, the SLS team will. This is what we do. We want to develop in the government side those technologies so that companies can innovate and use fewer people. Will NASA be using that few of people in order to doing something routine? I hope not, because that would mean we'd be competing with the private sector. We're going to do those things that are going to take a few more people, that are going to take that stretch of imagination. And as we develop those technologies, this is what makes America great in our capitalist society. The government doesn't want to pay for everything. We want to be a smaller percentage of aerospace than we are now, not by shrinking. We would love our investment to be greater, which is going to allow the private sector to leverage that investment on behalf of all of us and open up new markets, create new jobs, and provide the economic return that has been so prevalent with this industry. So we couldn't be prouder of SpaceX. We also couldn't be prouder of the shuttle team, the Orion team, the James Webb team. We have this charge that we do things in government, and I have worked in both the private sector and government, find both incredibly rewarding, but we don't do the same thing, and there's a reason.
Frank Boring.
Curtis Krueger, St. Petersburg Times. I think the public understands well that the space shuttle program is ending, but they have a fuzzy understanding of what comes next, some of the things you've been talking about today. How would you summarize, so the public can understand, what's coming next for American human space flight, both commercially and for NASA?
I'll just start with the details of Mike and Doug to follow. We are going to utilize the International Space Station for human space flight. We are going to do exactly what we set out to do, more than 20 years ago. But what this team has been working toward incredibly, incredibly successfully these last 10 years, launching and, as Mike laid out, building the International Space Station to be utilized. So we're going to utilize it. And we are going to lower the operational costs of it so that we can do those hard things. What are the big part of the operational cost of station? Transportation to and from. NASA is going next to take humans farther than ever before, beyond the moon to an asteroid and onward to Mars. We're an exploring species. We are, in the government, going to be doing the Lewis and Clark type missions so that we can be followed by the settlers, the pioneers who come in and want to take some risk and be able to provide a service not just to the government but to people beyond the government. NASA's not changing its role at all in human spaceflight. We are going to continue to utilize the space station to exceed what it was we even set out to do, as I said, by extending it, and to be able to reap the rewards on behalf of the American people. We're going to launch tomorrow, 23 hours almost exactly, what do you think? Mother Nature willing, we're going to be able to carry out this last space shuttle mission precisely, as Mike Sefferdini said, to stock the space station with all those wonderful things, to keep the utilization and research programs going, and to keep it well stocked until we're there with our international partner vehicles and our own U.S.-made vehicles launched from the United States very soon.
I can expand on some of this. In terms of space station utilization, it is important for our research. It is the place that we can learn about living for long periods of time and keeping people healthy in a closed environment. And it's going to provide the information we need for very long trips in the future. Provide the opportunity to test out systems. When we send people on long missions, our systems are going to have to be very reliable. It's going to be, if assembly was the big challenge on space station development, reliability for our systems for long missions is going to be important, and we're going to learn about those on space station. So the research that we do there is going to be geared and to a large degree for NASA on preparing for these long missions. And Lori said well about the path forward. Right now you hear more information about vehicles and that sort of thing, but we are we are at the stage of putting our first foot forward in developing the key capabilities that we need for these missions in the future. And it starts with a heavy lift vehicle and a crew vehicle. And those, we call it a capability-driven architecture. Those are the things we need to be working on right now to prepare. So it is in a kind of a state where we're in the development mode, and but we do have our sights on these missions of the future, and that I believe we should be talking about more actually, because that's why we're building these vehicles. It's to achieve things in space and learn about our own solar system and home in the universe. So that will be important for us.
Let's see, from an ISS capability, I would tell you that ISS has three fundamental purposes that help advance the different areas for ISS and for NASA, excuse me. One, of course, is the research that we do, and when it comes to the research, it's not only the fundamental research that's largely funded by NASA, but we've also obligated about 50% of the resources that the U.S. Has access to on ISS for national lab research. And this is where we're bringing in other government agencies, industry, and academia to utilize ISS for their own purposes. And we've started that at a much lower level. We're about to announce the NPO that's going to help us further that, NGO that's going to help us further that effort. And so that's all taking shape. The other part we play is, as Doug just mentioned, and that is getting us ready for exploration. Today we've done quite a bit of human research, talking about the adaptation of the human body to the microgravity environment. Not only is it the microgravity environment, but the rest of the environment around you, radiation environment, all these things are all things that are being demonstrated on ISS. We're making great strides in conditioning the human so that when they return, they actually can recover pretty quickly. Bone loss is down. We've made remarkable strides, but we've made those strides with relatively large systems that perhaps are going to be impractical to use on a trip to a faraway body. So we still have work to do in this area. In addition to that, technology development, this is where we'll advance technologies for exploration. Sometimes you just can't get the testing done you need until you get into zero gravity environment, and that's what ISS provides. Doug's talking about reliability. We do a lot of testing on the ground, but sometimes, particularly with new technologies, you find once you get in orbit, it doesn't act quite the way you had tested it. And ISS will give us that advantage, and we'll utilize that. The last piece of that is the demonstration of our capability. So you'll see us in the semi-near future start demonstrating the operations associated with a spacecraft that's far away from Earth, the communication lags and how the humans deal with it and how we deal with it from an operational standpoint. When you send a command to a system and you get a response 20 minutes later, that's a significant change. Some of our guys, particularly those at JPL, do that on a regular basis, but in the human world we haven't had to do that too much, and so that's part of what we'll also grow on ISS. And then the last part, of course, is to be the destination to encourage commercialization of low Earth orbit. And that's a critical role for NASA to play. And, of course, the ISS is the destination for the commercial cargo folks that we've talked about. Once they get up to full production, we'll be utilizing 5 flights a year from both SpaceX and Orbital, a combination of those two. So we'll keep them very busy. I expect them to be in the near term stressed from a production standpoint. Once they get over the stress of their first couple of flights, I think they'll all look at themselves and go, gosh, we got a lot of flights to put all in a row, and they need to all be safe and productive. And that'll also be a learning opportunity for them to do. How do you get a consistent production capability to provide you a consistently outstanding vehicle every flight? And that's what they need to learn to be good at what they do. And if we weren't there to be that capability for them, that they wouldn't have an opportunity to grow, because it's an expensive business to go out and do on your own without you know, a customer that needs you. And the same is true for commercial crew. When they're ready to go fly, the ISS will be configured to support the docking of those vehicles and give them a destination to go to on a regular basis. So those are the three big pieces that ISS is going to support. And as you've heard, that helps us move on to where we need to go as well. Not only are we helping industry and ourselves here on Earth, but we're preparing ourselves for exploration. So it really is a toehold to our next step in exploration of beyond low Earth orbit.
Okay, we'll take a few more on this side of the room before we come back over here. Frank?
Frank Mooring with Aviation Week. This is also for you, Lori. This morning you mentioned or stressed that the national space policy includes an emphasis on international cooperation. We've heard a lot today about U.S. industry. And I wonder a couple of things. If there is an articulated approach from this administration on what the role is between the U.S. as you say, a leader in space and its international partners, as opposed to perhaps the old role, which was not in the critical path. And also, China has just moved its space station to the launch pad. They'll probably launch it later this year. And I know that there's a lot of opposition in Washington to any sort of cooperation with the Chinese in space right now. But can you perhaps elaborate what your posture is toward, or what the administration posture is toward China at this point? Thank you.
I just find it fascinating that people believe that somehow we weren't allowed to have non-U.S. Entities in the critical path until now, when in fact we have been counting on the Russians and the Soyuz in the critical path for nearly a decade. We have, in this administration, articulated a policy which says we accept that space is by its very nature international. We intend to work where it makes sense with international partners who have capabilities that will allow us to expand not only utilization of space station, but going beyond. We have been working on the space science side with almost every space science mission we have is a collaborative international mission. And we believe as we explore and we work through existing cooperative agreements that we have with nations and new ones, that this should be done in a peaceful way as humanity explores off this planet. I do believe that in particular with China, you mentioned that there are concerns about working together. There's actually a law that NASA will not be working directly with the Chinese, and we intend to obviously adhere to that law. We have agreements on earth sciences, data exchange from China. That is really all of the formal agreements we have had in the past, and we will work with those partners that we can at this time to explore and work on the behalf of the American people to do that in a way that provides the best benefit to those of us here on Earth.
Okay, we have time, unfortunately, for only two more questions, and we're going to finish up in the back here.
Cliff McMurray, Norman Transcript. Question for Lori Garver. Those of us that have been following the shuttle program from the very beginning see a pattern of one replacement program after another proposed, living for a brief while on paper and maybe a bit of hardware and dying after about 3 to 5 years. So my question is, how can NASA ever progress anywhere if it cancels everything after 3 to 5 years, and what makes this plan any different?
Yes. Obviously, we have not found a way in this nation or others. When I've talked with our friends in Russia, they have the same challenges of being able to start a new program and start it robustly while you are continuing with an existing program. Programs overlapping causes us to have budgets that, at least at this point in our nation, have been unsustainable. So we have had these gaps. We have only been able to start major human spaceflight programs, really space station, following on space shuttle since Apollo. So we've been trying to live Apollo for 40 years, setting a date and a destination and trying to get there. And my view is that That was a successful time because of the Cold War, not because of the kinds of things that now we are trying to argue for: increased STEM education, increased return from science investment. We know that we have a half of a percent of this nation's budget, and we attempt and believe we do have the best space program on the planet that we can for that. We also invest more than any other nation, but we don't have 4% of the budget anymore like we did with Apollo. And even after Apollo, we flew that out and had a large gap of 8 years before we could fly humans into space. We do not believe we will have that gap, and we do not believe that we are starting again a program that will only last on paper for 3 or 5 years, because we are developing those partnerships with the private sector, who, again, government won't be the only customer. We don't want to depend just on taxpayers. That's when you end up having to change these programs with election cycles. So if you can get your operational costs down, get more people being able to utilize these systems, get the government percentage down, we'll be able to sustain those programs. As we invest in those programs that are uniquely NASA, we're also trying to work with other U.S. government agency partners so that they can be utilized. And again, not just a NASA program, so that can be sustained. The whole capability-driven budget is precisely to do those things that the government can do so that future Congresses, future presidents will be able to take those capabilities and turn them into the program that they believe takes advantage of that moment's science value that we have discovered, that moment's international cooperative program that has been developed, but allows us to build a capability to sustain human presence beyond low Earth orbit. The days of arbitrary dates, destinations, I think, has not been sustainable. We are trying to develop a program that truly continues to make us a spacefaring civilization, building on the space station, building on the private sector, and building on the imagination of this aerospace industry government-led team that's going to explore beyond low Earth orbit.
And we'll close with a question from Todd.
Todd Halverson of Florida Today for Lori. If one of the stated goals of NASA is to close the gap in American capability in human spaceflight, I'm just wondering why the budget isn't weighted more towards commercial crew than it is toward, like, the multi-purpose crew exploration vehicle. Why you aren't giving Ed more money than you're giving Mark?
Well, we are doing the more difficult thing with NASA of going farther, and truly believe that for a fraction of the cost, we can invest with our industry partners to be able to leverage that investment to take advantage of, again, what we've done for 50 years, to try to be a part of a market that will go further. I don't think our intention is to have so many NASA people, and as Keith Cowan's question earlier stated, the NASA way of doing business, to translate that to the private sector would be defeating our cause. Our cause is to tap into that entrepreneurialism, to the industry that really has learned from, and many of them are people who used to work either for NASA or larger aerospace companies, to do things differently. So yes, for a fraction of what the government's going to spend on its vehicles, we're expecting a lot. I think it's one of the reasons we have concerns about cuts to these programs. We laid out a budget and a plan, and it will be very, very difficult to shorten the gap without at least those funds that we have requested being sustained in the budget. There are a lot of challenges ahead, but we know that if we can stay on this path, we will be able to have a really, really bright future.
All right. Thank you all very much for coming. I apologize that we've run out of time. Tune in for fueling coverage of Atlantis's launch beginning at 1:50 a.m. on NASA television, and continuous launch commentary begins at 6:30 a.m. Once again, liftoff is targeted for 11:26 a.m. Eastern Time. And you also can keep track of the mission at the NASA website, www.nasa.gov/shuttle. Thank you.
Ms. Garber, just a quick question.